Hey, everybody, before we get into talking about the premiere of Hunted in this episode of the podcast, just want to take a moment and tell you about another premiere coming up on the 26th on the CW, and that is for the new show Riverdale from the network that brought you The Vampire Diaries and Gossip Girl. It's CW's wickedly irresistible new series, Riverdale. Riverdale is based on Archie comics. It's an adaptation that you've never seen before. It's all about the town of Riverdale, a small town with big secrets, and it's a story about a new year at Riverdale High and a grisly discovery, the body of one of its brightest young stars. The shock sets in over the entire town. Suspicions and questions are arising. Who killed Jason Blossom and why? What did everybody really do over the summer? And with whom? Now, if you ever read Archie comics, you know all the characters. They're all here. Good girl Betty, bad girl Veronica, golden boy Archie, or like me, that misunderstood loner Jughead. Which character are you secretly crushing on? You'll find out. Get ready, because in this twist of the classic, there's a lot more to each character than meets the eye, because in Riverdale, nothing, nobody are as they seem. So don't miss the thrilling premiere of the must-see new drama Riverdale, Thursday, January 26th, only on the CW. Coming to you live from the trunk of my car, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who is thinking about going with a new wig. I'm Rob Sesternino, and your time on the run has just begun as we are here to talk about the premiere of the new CBS hit reality series, Hunted. And here with me to talk about it is our team of runners who will be on the lam for the next couple of weeks, evading law enforcement. First off, a man who, you know, when they come out with a new reality series, he's always the guy that I reach out to help us make sense of any new show. A man who, as some say, that there is a curse that comes along with him, but I say, no, I don't believe it. Here is the great Kurt Clark. Kurt, how are you?
Doing well, Rob. Just wanted to let you know before we start that I haven't been arrested 13 times, but I have caused 5 shows to be canceled by talking about them.
Okay, we'll get into your resume later on. Okay. I'm sure it's not going to have anything to do with the success or failure of Hunted, the new hit reality series on CBS. And then joining Kurt and I to talk about this, that many of you enjoyed her on the So You Think You Can podcast competition. So please welcome back to the podcast, Liana Barras. Liana, how are you?
Wait, we're not talking about Kevin Can Wait?
No, no.
All right, all right. I guess I'm coming to you from my undisclosed location, but I guess I'm ready to talk about Hunted.
Or as maybe we should call it, Amazing Race OTT. All right.
I have no idea what this show is.
Well, that's what we're here to explain, Liana. We're here.
Okay. All right. Great.
That everybody who watched it is saying, I have no idea what this show is. And people who didn't watch it are saying, I have no idea what this podcast is. So that's what we're here to talk about. Hunted, which premiered after the AFC Championship game, which we don't need to get into any of what that was. But anyway, so Hunted premiered on CBS, the new reality series where they are taking 18 people in pairs of two, sending them out on the run, and then law enforcement officials are trying to track them down, and we are following the stories of those individuals. I really sort of thought we were going to be seeing all the teams getting, like, starting like an Amazing Race, like, okay, day one, all the teams are on the move. That certainly was not the case based on what we saw tonight. We saw the stories of 3 teams. We will talk about all of them here tonight. So, Kurt, did Hunted live up to your expectations of what you had in your head?
It actually did, very much so. I had the advantage of this past week watching the first episode of the first season of the British show Hunted.
Oh,
and it's there. It's 14 people instead of 18, because, you know, we're, you have to go bigger. And in that first episode, they introduce 3 of the teams. Actually, they have a couple people doing that as individuals, which is an interesting twist there. I think it's like, you know, 6 teams and then 2 just individuals. In that first episode, you get introduced to 3 of the groups that are running. One gets caught in the first episode by using an ATM and hopping on a bus and getting caught when they get off the bus. We'll talk more about
Wait,
that.
Is this a remake?
One spends their like one of the first couple nights at a campground in the first episode. So there are some interesting parallels, but I did come into it wondering how closely they were going to map it, because I just knew the amount of time you could potentially spend with any one team. I was actually happy that the way that they did it, and you're going to slowly start to get some teams staggered in and going to have team their stories rotate in and out. So it did kind of match up with what I was expecting.
Okay, Liana, did you have any expectations of this coming in?
No, I had no idea what to expect. I had heard, you know, some people talking about some other version, like Take the Money and Run, which was on ABC, and there was a show called Chase on Sci-Fi. Both of those have 6 episodes each. I don't know if that is a premonition for what we're going to expect here, but yeah, no, I had no idea.
Yeah, and this show is going to be in the Survivor time slot up until the point that Survivor comes on March 8th. Now, we had been talking about it on the podcast. We had done some commercial spots for it to promote it, but here we are ready to talk about it. And this, we will go, you know, a full unbiased review and report of what we saw tonight on Hunted and each week as we go through this series. And so, Kurt, were you pleased with what you saw tonight?
Despite what I've seen in some areas of social media, I actually enjoyed tonight.
Yes.
which means it's going to be around for a few weeks.
Kurt was into it. Liana?
Yes.
Have you ever seen like Mystery Science Theater 3000, where you're watching something that's so bad and you just get to make fun of it? That's what I'm really loving about Hunted. I feel like there are just so many opportunities. Did you guys see the guy with the newsboy cap and the bow tie completely unexplained with the Rubik's Cube? What was that guy doing there? What is his job?
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. That's what I'm going to say about Hunted. Because there seems to be, they've taken really dumb people. The contestants seem like they're really not at the top of their game. And then we've sort of taken a field of like 12 to 30 officials who had some background in government and psychology. And it's a bit of overkill in terms of what we're using, the forces we're using to capture these dumb game show contestants.
I started keeping track of the people at Command Central, and I quickly gave up. I mean, you've got the commander, you've got Teresa and Lenny. And then by the time we got to Ben, Connie, Ryan, Ri-Fi, Dr. Max, I literally stopped taking notes on who these people were. And I was like, guy who can rub things with pencils.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was a bit overwhelming for me.
Ri-Fi was the only name I wrote down, just because how do you not write down a name like Ri-Fi?
Yeah, we've really taken the entire might of like CTU and are using them to track down like a run-of-the-mill Amazing Race team.
Hey, well, I don't want to go on record as saying David is stupid. That's like the one person I want on my good side out of the 6 people that we met tonight.
Right. It's his girlfriend or fiance. That's the problem there when we talk about the saga of David and Emily.
And Emily.
All right, so let's just sort of like set the stage a little bit more before we get into these 3 teams. So the teams get told that they're on the run. They have about an hour to get ready. Leona, the shades of getting your key for the Big Brother house, right?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I was hoping for more cartwheels and, screaming. But it went pretty well. They just kind of surprised them. Clearly, they had no idea, you know, that the cameras were coming. it was a pretty exciting start. Very Big Brother-esque.
I'm hoping Big Brother adopts this method from now on whenever they start going and introducing like the keys, that there's like kind of like some sort of scare tactic involved.
go, move, get out, We gotta go. It does seem like there's like a weird mix between the teams. Like there is like so much preparation where we see with Emily's infamous calendar where she's planned out what she's doing for 28 days. But then there's other people, and other times, like, it's like, I gotta pack, grab underwear out of this drawer right now. Like, it's a very weird mix of how prepared and unprepared they are, Liana.
I just liked Angela packing the candy. She brought the snacks. Girl is ready to go.
I can't find my car keys, but I got I got all the Cheetos packed. We're good.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And somehow these teams have to evade capture for 28 days. And based on what we saw tonight, Kurt, I can't imagine anybody is going to get that $250,000.
I mean, that's the important thing. Like, as you know from the promo, like, potentially every team could get $250,000. So that's what, just over two. Well, now we know one team definitely isn't. So that's a potential $2 million payout that's hanging out here. It seems like, I think one of the things I enjoy about watching the show is, like, where are, like, as they're making these decisions, like, where are you sitting on the couch going, nope, shouldn't have done that. Bad move.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was bad. Was the prize money just in a safety deposit box somewhere? They just pulled it out. That was weird. That was very random. I was hoping for a treasure chest a la, you know, Survivor Borneo.
Yeah, that this is a show where they really have to show you a visual for every single thing that they talk about. Either that, or they spent all their money on overhead drone shots. A lot of overhead transitions of drones. They really did a good job there.
Yeah, was this trying to be like an NCIS or
Well,
some
yes.
type of drama?
And now I think you're on to something, because Andy Denhart from Reality Blurred, that he had an interesting tweet about this show, which was, and he was kind of down on it and talking about it on Twitter. He said, you know, full review of Hunted in the morning, but Hunted is a reality show made for CBS procedural fans, not for CBS reality show fans. That is its problem. So I think that's sort of like interesting to look at this show in terms of that the most popular things on CBS are the NCIS and all of those, their spinoffs and, you know, sort of things out of like the procedural mold of CSI. And really for like the last 15 years, that's been, we, you know, are tending to watch a lot of the reality shows on CBS here on the podcast, but that's really the other nights of the week. That's what's really cleaning up on CBS. So it's very interesting to see this reality show, which if you were just flipping the channels, I don't even think you would think this was a reality show, Kurt.
I think you're right. And I'm really hoping, we probably can't, but it'd be great if we get that Law and Order musical sting just to, like, you know, separate the segments out here, like, dun dun, as we talk about the different teams. But I think that's a really good point, is I'm curious for people who did just kind of tune in or like skip past it, or because I don't know if they're stopping, if they actually did kind of get a sense for what it's about. Because, I mean, it's well produced. Yeah. In terms of like the quality, mm-hmm.
And it's gorgeous.
And I'm actually getting like a real set. We'll talk about it when we get to David and Emily, but I'm getting like, you can feel the anxiety and the paranoia coming off of the teams. And you know that the reactions are real, and it's not like Amazing Race where they know that they're going to have to be in Morocco and get production there by the next day and make sure that you get fill there. But it's like, they suddenly find out that they have to, like, you know, potentially get a team to Augusta, Georgia, that's nowhere near the vicinity. So they have to kind of like scramble. So I think from a production perspective and just the level of improvisation that has to go into this logistically, I'm actually finding quite impressive.
I actually really do like the production quality. As I was watching it, I was thinking, it looks like it's directed by Michael Bay. Like, I'm expecting lens flares and explosions and stuff like that. Like, that seemed like to be the level of quality. But, you know, it seems very difficult to keep that up. Like you're saying, while they're having to follow these contestants, you know, everywhere in, I guess, 100,000 square miles.
It's a fine line to walk also tonally, because the show treats everything like deadly serious. There's no campiness whatsoever. There's no lightheartedness other than when they say that, boy, these guys are really dumb. Like, these are really stupid people that we're trying to track. So there's no lightheartedness about anything that's going on in the show. And, you know, contrast that with some of the other reality shows that we've talked about, Kurt, along the way. So it's just like it's deadly serious, but there's also like this like suspension of belief that's going on. I would guess, you know, Kurt, if I was going to compare it to the other shows that we've podcasted about, in some ways, it's a little bit like the Quest, where the people like are talking about like that. Oh, this is real. And, you know, that we have to go fight Verlox. And this is like a real important thing that's going on. But, you know, we sort of have to like, OK, well, this is like they're also like, we know everybody knows that they're also pretending.
Or even like in Whodunit, when people are like getting killed off left and right, and they're trying to like, you know, when they're getting given the killer clue and they think it's an actual bomb, and they have to kind of react as if it really is when they know there's no way it is. I mean, this they're at least there in those two shows, the game board is a production set, for lack of a better term. Here, your game board is Southeast US. Mm-hmm. So it's. I think they in many of these other shows, you have some, at least at the back of your head, some reassurance that production is going to have everything taken care of and everything's under control and we're not going to get hurt. But here, I think maybe just the fact that you're kind of in your own backyard and the area is the playing board with other people who aren't involved. Maybe there's a sense internally that, you know, almost anything could happen. And I'm sure that's kind of where we see some of the emotional charged parts of the show.
And I guess the stress really comes from, boy, I'd really like to get that money at the end of this. If I could just not get caught, I would really like to get the money. So
yeah. I think maybe that was my problem. I need to think it's real.
Yes.
Because
want you to. They want you to, like, really, like, I think that they, you know, just like when we talked about Whodunit and people would write in, like, hey, they're murdering people on TV. I think they really do want you to think that these people have done something and they are on the run.
A tenuous grasp on reality has really helped me get through many of these shows.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good way. I'll look at it like that next time. I'll just imagine that it's Jason Bourne out there being chased. So.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about our three couples or pairs that we saw tonight. And I want to start with our millennial team, Matt and Christina. And they were the first couple in the history of Haunted to be brought down by the Haunted team. Liana, did you think they had a chance?
Oh, my. I did. I did at first. I liked the idea that they were using wigs, even though they're really, really bad wigs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. But like the creativity was inspiring. But oh, my God. Talk about stupid.
Yeah. Kurt, so they were the engaged millennials for people that did not watch the show. Matt is 6'8". Christina,
I'm gonna wear this wig so nobody recognizes me.
Yeah, and Christina is a professional model and a former Miss South Carolina, and so they had two plans, really. Plan number one was they both talked to their parents multiple times a day, so they needed to get on the run. So their plan was they were gonna go to their parents' house. I don't know whose parents. But this is a millennial stereotype. Mom and dad, help me out.
They've got a basement.
Yes.
But it's and also keep in mind, well, the other teams, their goal was to get out of Atlanta. Matt and Christina's goal was to get into Atlanta where there are more cameras.
Okay, this is what I don't understand. There's something that you do every single day. You're trying to evade capture. You're going to go do that thing.
Yes.
I really don't understand that logic. But I don't know. I get the sense from Matt that he's kind of got that like dead in the eyes look, like lights are on, but no one's home. So, you know, kind of not surprising.
Yeah, there wasn't a real sense of urgency from Matt and Christina, Kurt.
I liked part two of their plan where it sounds like they had a very extensive network of contacts. sorry, I just realized how that sounded. In the Atlanta area.
Yes.
And that they were
all
going
of their
to
friends and family.
Yes. And I have no doubt that that's like, you know, probably could easily just through friends and friends of friends extend to hundreds of people. And so I liked the idea of vanishing into that network of people and just kind of being passed around like a hot potato. But calling both of your parents when you like, it's not just your phone that they're tracking, and they're going to be tracing your parents' phones as well. They're going to find out who's close to you.
Yeah.
Like in the BBC version, there was a scene where the ex-husband was being called and it was a call coming from a remote campground. And there, the investigators were like, well, what reason would this campground have to call the ex-husband? That's good. That's suspicious. Let's take a look. I mean, it wasn't like he called them, they called him. So, and you know, and rightly so, that was something that was looked into. So yeah, not the sharpest knives in the drawer.
Okay. I have a question. Are there certain rules that they can't just go live in the woods?
I think you could go live in the woods.
Well, because why are they calling so many people? Why are you calling your friends? Stop calling your friends.
I wondered that when I watched the UK show as well. And when I've, like, you know, chatted about this with people, and even like one of my friends right before we were about the podcast, like, I just go live in the woods for 28 days. And I'm like, well, that's Survivor, different show.
Yeah.
But I guess
they tried,
like,
to take the slogan, right? 28 days, 18 fugitives.
Yeah.
Possibly 18 survivors.
Kurt, you would just go live in the woods? Like, I feel like that's kind of dangerous.
Well, for an LA guy like you, I mean, I grew up in West Michigan where, you know, you're hunting and camping and fishing. And,
but with what? Right? You're just going to sleep on the ground in the woods?
Yeah, you could potentially do that. Yeah. It's something that happens.
Why not? Yeah. Well, they had tents and sleeping bags. Just go backpack for a month.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, that's what you guys would do.
But
well, I'd have to go outside. That would be a problem.
But to Liana's point, I don't know what the rules are that we don't see. Mm-hmm. So it could very well be that there is something in the fine print saying, like, you can only stay in one location for 5 nights. I don't know. But that wouldn't necessarily make for great TV. But the great other thing is we've got 6 teams we haven't seen yet. That might be the plan for some of them.
Yeah. And I don't sense there's a rule that you can't go live in the woods. I just think that nobody decided to do that. But I do think that you might be onto something, Kurt, in terms of that they have to stay on the move because, as we will see later on, that Emily had planned out a number of different locations that they were going to be on the run, moving from place to place. One of the other things that Matt and Christina did was Christina deleted her Twitter. Liana, was that a smart move?
Well, unless she's got some, like, Ken Bone types of comments, I don't really understand the point. I mean, she still has a Facebook and stuff, which is funny. I just like the fact that the command center people are essentially Facebook stalking.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really all they're doing. Like, this is what 12-year-old girls do, right? So I don't really see what they're going to get out of it. I mean, again, if they're finding their friends and they're just going to go hang with their friends, so.
Liana, that's how they busted Joey Rodriguez, right?
Yeah, they should totally hook up.
I can shed some light on that, though. So I think I know that they are
Joey Rodriguez.
Yes, on Joey Rodriguez. I've got. Oh God, no. Just in terms of, they are looking for just anything that's important to them and that they can use as leverage, like in terms of, and not to keep going back to the UK version, but that sometimes this is how they're not given, like, profiles necessarily on specifically, like, these people, you know, their entire family situation. So that's how you can find out, you know, if this person has kids, they're probably going to want to potentially call them or reach out to them. That's something that we can use later on. And I think they referred to, like, what are the buttons that we can push? Those are the sorts of things that we can find out on social media. It's like, you know, what if we can, you know, for me, you know, what if we can spoil something for Kurt on a show he's about to watch? Oh no, he'll come on the radar and then we'll capture him. But I was like, oh gosh, he likes food. Let's leave some food out. But yeah, I think it's one of those things where you never know what you're going to find and you never know what's going to lead you in a particular direction.
Okay. So it looked like at one point, Matt and Christina had a little bit of a leg up on the law enforcement that they said at the command center that we've really hit a wall trying to track down Matt and Christina. And on top of that, they went into phase 2 of their plans when they both got Jacob deGrom type wigs and put them on. And I believe that Christina may have been pretending to be a boy at that point, Liana.
Yeah, I really don't know what was happening with those wigs. Is it the driest, nastiest wigs they could find? Like, these are the ones you're going to use? And again, when they use the ATM, there's nothing covering their faces. They don't put on makeup or try to change anyway. It's so, like, I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why they think that this is going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Let's put on our new disguises and then use the ATM so they have a photograph of us in our new disguises. That's pretty much the plan that they had.
Exactly. That was the other thing that didn't make sense. If you're going to use a disguise, like, you're going to get a picture on record of you in your new outfit? Yeah. Like, no.
Okay. Yeah. So if you want a different baseball reference for the wigs, you can go with a Tim Lincecum wig as well. And so the problem was that they had a car. They decided that they needed to get rid of the car, and they were going to take a bus into Atlanta. And the bus ticket happened to cost like $38. And part of the rules, and I didn't explain this, is you have an ATM card, and you have $500 in the ATM, but you could only withdraw $100 at a time. And so you could do that five times over the course of the 28 days. So at the bus station, there was an ATM. And they decided, okay, the bus is coming at 2:05. It's 2:00. Let's risk it. Let's take the money out of the ATM at the bus station so we can buy the bus ticket and then get off to Atlanta scot-free. It's a foolproof plan, Liana.
It's a game changer, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. So I really, for a very brief split second, thought that this would have been one of the perfect ways to throw out a digital crumb that sends them in the wrong direction.
Yes.
Use the ATM, buy the tickets, then don't get on the dang bus.
Well, yeah. Kirk, that's what law enforcement said when they came over. They said, oh, they're probably throwing us off the scent. They can't be that stupid than to use the ATM and then get on this bus.
Yeah, I think it would have been smarter to, rather than, you know, get the money. And I'm saying what all the listeners already know. It would have been smarter to get the money at an ATM elsewhere in the town and then buy the tickets there versus rather than get the ATM, use the ATM there and then maybe skip out of town to try to fool them.
Yes.
They got to that. They heard it was $39 a person or whatever. They said, well, there's an ATM right here. And they decide, well, we'll risk it. No, don't risk it. You know, it's walk around Augusta for a night. No one's going to even know you're there. And it sounds like the whole reason they did it was because they thought, well, we've been in this car for a while. They've probably tracked the plates by now, but they hadn't. They could have kept going.
Did they have a death wish? Did they just want to be off the show? Did they not like it, Kurt?
That could very well have been. There's all these forces came together that just caused them to make what they thought were subconscious decisions, but I think they may have actually forced themselves out.
Because instantly after they use the ATM, an alert comes up on Connie Min's desk and says, we've got some action at the ATM. They're using the ATM at the bus station. And over at command center, they said, wow, that's pretty stupid. But we like stupid. And I said, oh, this is very relatable for me.
I wrote that down. I wrote that down, but I couldn't remember any of the people's names. So I just have, quote, dude in command center, because that was all I could remember.
That was British dude in command center. Let's get real.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Right. Yeah. I don't need nicknames for them all.
Because I was thinking the same thing. It's like, oh, like they could get the money here and then just go somewhere else. And I mean, not even necessarily get the ticket. And then that could fool them. And then cut to command center where there's like, well, they could be doing this, and then that could be their plan. I'm like, oh, crap, I wouldn't have fooled this guy. So they're at least on the game for somewhat.
It's pretty stupid, but we like stupid. So on the bus, Matt and Christina are starting to have second thoughts. Maybe did they blow it? So their new plan, Liana, is going to be that when they get off the bus, they're just going to run for it.
That's talk about a really well thought out strategy. The just run for it is probably, the way to go. But they had two teams, Team Golf and Team Foxtrot, waiting for them. So I don't really know what their plan was going to be otherwise.
Yeah, they were ready to go. And they basically set a trap. And, we get to see like a graphic of like, okay, the bus is pulling into a trap set by the team. And so they had them surrounded on both sides. And we were ready for basically what was going to be our first capture in the history of Hunted. And Kurt, we got into a foot race where John and Vinny were running down Matt and Christina and then tapped them on the shoulder.
Don't forget about, I think we also had Shadow and his partner there as well. I'm trying to remember.
Cordis.
But yeah, so you basically pen them in, and it just wasn't going to work.
Do you think Shadow is his legal name?
Probably.
You have that on probably.
So, Leon, were you impressed with how the show captured Matt and Christina?
I was really hoping for a taser. Hoping for a taser. It's so anticlimactic. They just walked up and tag. Okay.
Yeah. And they said, Matt and Christina, your time on the run is over.
Do you think that's going to be the saying that everybody, you know, instead of like, you're terminated, it's going to be, what was it again? It was too long.
Your time on the run is over.
Oh, yeah. Time on the run is over. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think they need to workshop that.
Yeah, I think so too.
I do like the concept, the idea that this is like just a series of like school playground games, like tag just strung together. Like you've got that one couple that's playing hide and seek in the trunk of a car. You've got tag going on. Just see what other games we can work in here.
Yeah. Well, when is Ring Around the Rosie going to come into play? I'm really looking for that one.
Exactly. That's a good point. I really feel like that we could have used, if not a taser, would be number one. That'd be ideal. But could we tackle them?
No. That would hurt.
Yeah, but that's exciting. I don't know. They might want to shy away from the whole police brutality thing. That's probably not what CBS is looking for, but yeah. I don't know. I was hoping for the taser, but the tackling I would have taken as well.
I'm looking for like a big net to drop down on them. Yeah.
Big net. That would be good. Yeah. But at least like, hey, down on the ground, like something. I feel like that, we had our big chase scene, our big climactic moment for Matt and Christina that they're finally caught. And then it's just like, okay, tag, you're it, game over.
Did they even handcuff them?
No, they got to handcuff them.
Yeah, what?
I got to see, Matt is, stuffed down into the back seat of the squad car, all 6'8" of him.
Exactly. Yeah. With his stupid wig.
With his stupid wig. Yeah.
It's from Halloween. We are just going to use these. Like, oh, God.
Yes. Can somebody track down, can any of our hunted detectives track down Matt and Christina? I'd like to know if they were live tweeting, if Christina restored her Twitter.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think Christina can tweet. She canceled that.
Yeah. Okay. So that was the saga of our millennials. But let's get into talking a little bit about Emily and David, who were the people that we opened the show with. David apparently has been on the run his entire life before becoming a lawyer somehow. He had been arrested 13 times, and he seems like he knows what's going on, Kurt.
Yeah, he's got those street smarts, those survival instincts from his gang days back in Miami.
Yeah.
And for those of you who didn't watch the show, his best friend describes him aptly as, it looks like Abraham Lincoln and Carrot Top had a ginger kid. What?
Carrot Top keeps coming up in reality shows in 2017. He's already been seen in two episodes of Celebrity Apprentice so far in January. This is like Carrot Top's month.
It's like the worst Where's Waldo character ever, because he's so easy to pick out.
Yes. And then, Liana, that David has a lady friend.
That's how he describes her. That's the best part.
Yes, his lady friend, Emily Cox.
Yeah, Emily's a dud. David is killer. I love this dude, even though the fact that he does look like Max Dawson, but that's fine, a ginger version. So love David, not so high on Emily.
Kurt, are you down on Emily?
You know what? I just find it odd that she's hoping to prove herself to her boyfriend that she too can escape law.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only part that really kind of strikes me as odd. We'll talk about her slip up, which I chalk that up less to any like stupidity on her part and more to some of the innovativeness of the crime scene folks.
Okay. We'll get to that. Yes. Yeah. It seemed like they have a weird reason for being on the show that, he's like, I just want to see if I could evade the best in law enforcement. Doesn't seem like, it's not like, I really like the money, or it's not even like the amazing race. I really like to test this relationship. It's just like, I really want to see if I can stay on the lam away from the best in law enforcement. Doesn't that seem like kind of a perverted goal to have, Kurt?
Yeah, it's like on Survivor, it's like, I want to win this show so that I can show my kids I can do anything. But here on Hunted, you're like, I want to win this show to show people that I can also skirt the bounds of the law and stay off the radar and do, potentially, illegal things, hit and run accidents. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand. Is David using this as a test so then he can go do illegal things later? He's like, well, if I can avoid these guys, then I can get away with the murders.
Yeah, it's like, this will really impress my friends from the gang.
Right? He's still looking for that street, that the credit, street credit. So
much street
credit. He's going to prove himself. Yeah.
So much street credit after this. Okay. So he is a criminal defense attorney. And so we have Emily, who, in fairness to Emily, she doesn't know a lot about being on the lam. Her dad is a minister. Liana, are you getting the sense that Emily is a good girl posing as a rebel?
Yeah, she's got some tattoos.
Is she rebelling against her dad?
She's, yeah, take the that, minister. Dad. Some,
yeah,
some people like TP other people's houses or like do a bunch of drugs, but no, she's going to go on the run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, David is a bad boy and she's going on the run.
A bad boy who wrote an autobiography.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
And I like, they bring in the behavioral profiler and he basically gets like the Cliff's notes of what he's supposed to do and just reads his autobiography and then like passes it off as his own thinking.
What? Yes.
I think he has he has a really low opinion of law enforcement. And they're like, yeah, that was chapter 14.
Yeah, that's what it was titled.
Dr. Max Wachtel, the behavioral psychologist.
Nice.
That's about what I... At this point, I stopped doing last names, and then shortly after this, I stopped doing names.
Yes.
Well, I think it would have been really useful if everybody had written an autobiography, right?
Exactly. Yes.
We only cast people who have written extensive autobiographies about themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so the book, it is available on Amazon, on Kindle and paperback. It's called The American Dream, his story in the making. It's like that they've taken his story, but they've left in an extra S, which is seems like, I feel like he could have probably gotten that same effect with like capitalizations. But yeah, The American Dream is at once an inspiring account of a young man's journey from defendant to defense attorney, a window into the inner workings of one of Miami's most notorious drug rings, and a chilling portrait of the streets that America's poverty-stricken youth call home.
Colon, part one. We could have workshopped that maybe.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Maybe we can get him on the podcast from the book tour.
I liked from defendant to defense attorney. That's catchy. Well, good. But
that's a good slogan.
I mean, to be fair, he has a story that's probably very interesting.
Yes. His story. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, yes.
So David has to go pick up Emily and then they're in the car and they're sort of like trying to get away. Liana, who is the woman who's driving the car?
No clue.
Karen. That was Karen.
Who is she?
Karen.
Just a friend. Just a friend.
It's Karen, obviously.
Everybody's got a Karen in their life.
She's just a friend who's just driving stuff around. And so they stop at the ATM, they get out their $100, and then they're driving around all willy-nilly, Kurt, and we have a car accident.
Karen!
Typical Karen.
Classic Karen.
This is Emily's distracting her. They're talking about their plan, like, take us out to this, my old, college buddy's place, and we're gonna stay there. And Karen just didn't keep her eyes on the road. But apparently it was the fault of the other guy, because the other guy kept going. Luckily, imagine if this was probably like their dream casting assignment in terms of like, this is the group that we want to do well. And they're caught immediately because they run into a car and there's a car accident and the cops show up. Although I don't know like what necessarily about that, if anything specific would ping on the radar of the hunted teams, because it would all be Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they're like, what? And there's a camera crew in the back.
Right.
It actually worked out really well for Karen because it was a hit and run, right? So she has the camera. She's got proof of what happened. Right? Like, that looks good for insurance.
Now, do you think there's any chance, Kurt, that this car accident was staged? A lot of people were asking me in the different questions that we have that, do you think, was this a setup? Is that possible?
I see no reason for this to be a setup. I see absolutely. Look, let's say the conspiracy theories for other series.
The only thing I'll say about the conspiracy theory is that it was like a totally victimless thing that happened, and it was a really exciting moment on the show. Like, nobody got hurt. The car didn't get totaled. Like, seemingly no laws were broken by the participants of the show, and it was a really exciting way to open up the show.
I think there could have been more exciting. I think they just got lucky. I mean, let's go with the Occam's razor, simplest solution here, and just say, you know what? It just happened and they caught it on camera. I'm going to be very intolerant of conspiracy theories for this.
Okay, that's fine. Sorry.
I liked it.
And that's a call out to the listeners. Just warning you ahead of time.
I thought it was one of the better parts of the show. I kind of wish they had done it on purpose.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was like, wow, oh my God, what happened? But then they came back from commercial break and everybody was fine. So, Liana, were you worried about them in the car accident?
I was. That was the first part of the show that I got really excited. I felt invested because I really liked David. I was, oh no, they got hit, and then cut back to commercial and then nothing. Like, oh yeah, okay, well, they drove off. We're just going to keep going.
Yeah. So David and Emily, here was their plan. David has a friend that he went to law school with, and they are going to go to his house, Brad's house. I'm not sure where Brad lives, but they're going to go hide in Brad's house for a couple days. It seems like it'd probably be pretty boring there, Kurt, right? Just living at Brad's house for 28 days.
Maybe he's got Xbox. I don't know.
Yeah. But they have no privacy. And Brad's wife seemed a little nonplussed about the whole thing, Liana.
Yeah, she did not seem happy. She was like, who are these people? I have to host this camera crew. What is happening?
This is the conspiracy theory I will allow, though. What if Brad's wife is the one that actually tipped them off to the location and it wasn't anything to do with like pencil rubbings?
That's a good point. Yeah, I can see that.
She's like, I want to get these people out of my house.
Yeah.
I'm calling the command center.
All right. So meanwhile, the command center, they said, okay, you know what? Time to move in. We need to do a raid of David and Emily's place. And so they left no stone unturned. And they confiscated Emily's laptop and her computer, and they went through the trash. And Liana, they even went into the refrigerator and found a big pot of macaroni.
This was hands down my favorite part.
I was surprised that Shadow was able to run as quickly as he could to catch Matt and Christina, given that he probably carbo-loaded on those that spaghetti we saw.
That's why he could catch them, because he had all the energy from the pasta.
Exactly.
The spaghetti. And they took a picture. They took a picture of the pasta.
What does it mean? What is this? What is this? Ziti? What is Ziti? What kind of person has Ziti? Why not spaghetti?
Well, it's like, okay, I could rationalize this away, actually. It could be like, well, it looks like she actually cooked enough to fill up the whole pot. And just from what we can tell, it was actually made yesterday, but half of it's missing. So she probably had some people over. Let's find who she had over, because she would have talked to them about the show and she might have asked them if we can stay with them. Yep. There we go. Boom. There's your pasta evidence.
Okay. But, all right. I'll give you that.
What is wrong with David and Emily? Like, they clearly, as we will talk about in a moment, they had a calendar. They know when Hunted is going to start. Why did they have leftovers in the refrigerator, Liana?
I'm all about throwing out distractions. Maybe the spaghetti is a distraction. I don't know.
You think that this was like the equivalent of going to the ATM when you're not getting on the bus, the bus terminal, just to throw off law enforcement? Like, here's what we'll do. Cook a big pot of spaghetti.
Poison
in the refrigerator. They'll be wondering what the hell we were doing. It'll be perfect.
Then you put the sleeping pills in there.
We don't even eat spaghetti.
Oh. You put the sleeping pills in there so the people who raid your place eat it, and then they fall asleep, and that's like one less team that's coming after you. Bye-bye, Team Foxtrot.
You're going to roofie the law enforcement within the spaghetti?
I'm not admitting to that.
Is that legal? Right.
No. My theory... Pasta is a trap. One theory, and I don't think I'm going to go back and watch the episode to see if it's right. What if Emily has a roommate that we just didn't see on the TV? And it's like, well, just let you know we're coming in. And we won't go into your room, but
Did she not sign the release? I feel like we would have seen... unless it was Karen. Is Karen her roommate?
The roommate, Karen.
She was at the body shop getting the hit and run fix.
It was Karen's pasta.
Hashtag Karen's pasta. Yeah, so they find a planner, and we see that we take it back to the lab, and it looks as though that Emily has written an entire calendar of events onto her monthly planner. Liana, could you believe this?
Okay, I was still confused about this situation. Well, first of all, who uses a physical calendar still?
That's a good question.
I mean, I was being pretty serious. I got out my gel pens and Hello Kitty notebook to write down notes for this, so I guess I can understand. But was she writing down where they were going to go when they were being hunted? Or did she write down what she would have done had she not been on the lam?
It sounds like it was planned for June, and she planned out what their June itinerary would be if they were being hunted for 28 days. That's the impression I got from it.
I'm sure they knew the filming dates. They probably were planning what they were going to do when they were hunted. I mean, if any of the teams were prepared for this, I mean, the guy who's written a book about his life, who's been arrested 13 times, who's going on the show to prove to the world that he can evade law enforcement. I mean, I think that they were sort of planning ahead of time on this.
And even if you're not sure where within a 48-hour window you're going to get kicked off, you can know at least that, you know, starting on day three, you're going to be on the run. You're going to be on the run by this time. So let's make sure that on this date, we're going to get to, because I think it was day three that they got to Brad's place. I will say this about the show. I could use a little better idea of timing. Like, you know, do the survivor thing, day three, day 15, whatever. And just because I don't know, as these teams start out, if it's truly a staggered start, if all of these teams are starting at the same time, because I think what we might be seeing down the road is, if, you know, 3-4 episodes down the road, David and Emily are still running, it's going to be day 17 for them, but we might be seeing day 2 for another team. So I'm hoping they do find a way to make that more clear.
No, I think it's staggered, because it looks as though, like, Team Foxtrot seemed to be in a lot of places at once. Those guys were on the move.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea what's happening. So I would really like any type of information would be very useful.
So the calendar ends up getting into the hands of Landon Stewart in the cast of Thousands. It's delivered to him by Andy Stumpf. And Landon,
you're doing God's work.
Yes. Landon is saying, hold on a second. Look at this calendar. I think that the dates are filled in. I think if I get out a number 2 pencil and color in, shade in over the date, I can figure out where this was. And I think it might have been impressive if I didn't see Buddy Garrity already do the same thing in season 2 of Friday Night Lights.
And if I didn't see Encyclopedia Brown do this when I was in third grade. But it's also something that is done. I've probably done this in 5 or 6 escape rooms.
Kurt.
So, I mean, it's the funny thing is that he's a cyber analyst, but he was like in the most analog way possible, trying to track down clues.
Liana, were you impressed with the detective work here?
I was impressed. I thought that was pretty cool with, what was his name?
Landon.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, Landon is my favorite now, I've decided, randomly. So he really killed it on that move. Yeah.
Are we doing a Command Center draft at the end of this, Rob? Because I don't have any of his names. So please say no.
Maybe for
I'm taking Landon.
On Wednesday night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so they said that little do they know, they might have been taken down by a number 2 pencil.
That should have been the title of this, not the internet never forgets. As they taken down by a number 2 pencil or defeated by a number 2 pencil would have been great, although they technically weren't yet.
If this was an Amazing Race episode, it would have been taken down by a number 2 pencil.
That's true. But the reason I like this, is actually a little bit less the fact that Landon, the NSA cyber analyst, figured out that he could still see the impressions. But for me, it was like the fact that Emily is clueless that she left a huge paper trail for them to follow. And now I'm like wondering, like, is David going to be able to, if he finds out that that's what happened, or just if he finds out that somehow they know about every move we're making, Brad, are you a mole? And then he takes down Brad. I'm wondering, like, is he going to be able to improvise and completely change up the 28-day plan that they've already established? That's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Well, that's a really good point, because they did seem to be the team that was the most planned out of all of them, right? I mean, they went to Brad's house, they're hanging out with Brad and going through maps and like planning out their whole strategy, which I guess maybe they had already kind of figured out based on that calendar. But yeah, if they can change, especially now that they're being stalked by people in black Escalades, they're going to have to, you know, change their strategy up.
Yeah, I just want to have the scene in the show, and I hope that we get it when David finds out the reason they got caught was because Emily wrote all of the dates down on the calendar, on the day planner. I feel like it's going to be like in Goodfellas when Henry Hill finds out that Karen flushed all the Coke down the toilet.
Classic Karen.
Yes, classic Karen again. Yes. Like, what do you mean you wrote everything on the calendar?
I have a feeling, though,
that
I can see David and Emily like sitting around the dining room table with that planner out in front of them, writing like he's like planning stuff out somewhere and she's writing it down the dates. And then they take the sheet with them they've probably got that sheet as a reminder because they didn't find it in the garbage because they're going to be looking through the garbage as well.
No, he probably was like,
burn it right away.
We'll never find it. Burn it. Throw it in the fire. Yeah.
So I think they might have it with them, but I have a feeling part of me thinks that David was probably there when it was written on the calendar and they just weren't thinking.
Maybe.
It's just a guess. Maybe. It's a maybe. It's a big maybe.
Maybe they also didn't realize that they were going to break into their house and go through all their stuff.
Did David talk about it when he wrote his autobiography? When he told his story?
Yes. We need somebody to read it. And
I kind of want to read it now.
Okay. So things are really starting to heat up at Brad's house because they realize, hey, isn't there a black Escalade with tinted windows like at the entrance to the development? Isn't that weird? And so
That was my favorite part.
Yeah. Why? Why did that appeal to you so much, Kurt?
Like just that dead stare that suddenly took over David's face. Like he went into battle mode and like just like this. It wasn't fear, but like I don't know what it was, but you just saw this like physical transformation take over his face. And to me, that was like, this is real. I mean, this is like in terms of this isn't something staged that they're refilming or he doesn't know this is going on. That emotion of like, were we caught and just not knowing how to respond and just like getting the news right then and there. I liked the impact of that.
Yeah, I think David is having some like PTSD from his 13 times on the run before. So,
yeah, so. The plan now is that they see like Brad drives around and he sees that there's a car like sort of like looking over the overpass of all the cars coming and going. So they decide, OK, we need to get David and Emily into the trunk of Brad's car and then Brad is going to drive them out. And so David and Emily are getting loaded up and David's got like a camcorder into the trunk of Brad's car. Kurt, was that getting real for you yet?
This is one of those things where I do have to, we haven't really talked about the fact that they do have camera people with them, that it's not just all like, you know, handheld cams. And so I think that, and even, you know, they talk about this on the British series as well, that each team is going to have someone following them. I haven't seen an instance yet where the game is up, where their position is foiled in the game because someone sees a cameraman. But I think in this case, this is the closest that we got in the first episode in terms of they weren't going to put the cameraman in the trunk. Mm-hmm. And the cameraman was like, I think, flat on the back seat of Brad's car because you had that one view of like kind of up pointing up at Brad. And they couldn't all three be in the back seat. So yeah, I think that they had a that was just kind of their solution for the situation. How do we get all three of us out without anybody seeing us? Well, two of us will have to go into the trunk.
And the thing that we don't know is how, you know, big and obtrusive the camera crew is and the production crew. Is there also a producer? Is it just like one camera person with sort of like, you know, so, you know, the cameras get smaller and smaller and smaller. And so is there a sound guy also? So it's, you know, it'd be interesting to know how many people are on the crew that's coming along with them. I would suspect maybe it's just one person, Liana.
I think it is.
Well, I don't know, because when the car crash happened, they were filming Karen's car from a different car.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's a camera dude in the car with them, and then there's the sound people, producers, whatever, following. But yeah, I'm not sure. I would assume it would only be one guy, but that car scene made me question that.
Maybe there's a camera person that's sort of like embedded with them, but then there's also like the rest of the people from a production team that are sort of like nearby at all times. So I guess if the hunted producer, like, this is another good question that people have, like how much are in touch are the hunted producers, you know, the camera people that are following the SWAT team with the camera people that are following David and Emily around?
I mean, I assume they're not in contact.
You would think so. You think that they're not like sharing
information. You would hope so.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Again, that conspiracy theory that I'm just not willing to entertain.
What I'm saying is, like, are the people, like, who are the hunters? Do they say, oh, there's, you know, one of our production vans around here, so I know we must be close. Yeah.
Do they also have black Escalades?
You know, I don't think that the production is feeding information to the team, but, like, is the team, like, the people who we've said are definitely smarter than most of the contestants, are, do they know what to be looking for? Is that sort of like aiding them? Believe me, they don't need any help.
That's what I was saying. Is like I'm very cautious of entertaining, theories that the people who are the hunters are actually going to be able to, like, you know, either, you know, the cameraman's going to tip them off either because they can see the cameraman or because the cameraman's like somehow, you know, giving them information. Unintentional things, I think, you know, that I wouldn't doubt that there's maybe something that they can pick up, and we'll just see how legitimate they are. But I do kind of like the idea, if your team wins, maybe you as the cameraman get a bonus as well. That's something that I'd like to see happen. Yeah. Wow.
That sounds like collusion.
A game changer, Kurt. Yeah. So the big problem now for David and Emily, and this was a bit of a cliffhanger, was that the law enforcement guys see Brad's car and say, why is this guy leaving in the middle of the night? Liana, did that occur to you that if they left in the middle of the night that they were going to get busted?
Yeah, let's go out on the road when there's no other cars anywhere. No, I mean, I think that they wanted to get out while it was dark, although it appeared like the car was in a garage, so it doesn't really matter. And if they're going to be in the trunk anyway, I mean, again, I guess this is why I think about the camera dude. Like, did the camera guy in the back seat give it away, or was it really how fast that car was driving?
It looked like the camera guy was like flat on the back of you wouldn't be able to see him if he was like laying down in the bottom area, because he was like almost like in the where your feet go in the back seat. He was like way down there. But
can you imagine being that guy?
Yeah. At least he wasn't in the trunk with his camera.
That's right.
It's true.
So predictions, David and Emily, Kurt, you think they're going to be on the run here for a little bit? Or you think that they are quickly found when we pick things up on Wednesday night? Of course, 2 hours of Hunted coming up Wednesday night.
Well, as I say, they can't obviously be pulled over for anything in this instance. But you can tail them and just see what's going on. But if they tail them, and if Brad recognizes that the Escalade is tailing them, he's just going to drive around and like go grocery shopping or something, and just try to kind of potentially play it off. Something where he doesn't have to leave the car. So because Brad knows that there's a chance that the Escalade is going to follow him, and he's going to maybe be keeping an eye on that, I think they're going to squeak by this next week.
I think the key player really is Brad, right? Isn't Brad kind of the
If he has to go to work the next day or something?
He takes them with him.
Yeah.
He's still in the trunk.
Like, do the hunters have the jurisdiction to pull over Brad's car? Do they have a siren, Liana?
I don't think so. I don't know what the rules are, if they can chase down Brad. I mean, clearly they can chase down, you know, we saw that with Christina and Matt, but I mean, don't they have to have a reason? I think they still have to follow the law, right?
Yeah. That's like, it's just a random car that they have like no, I think they would just have to basically, just like the same reason they can't go, you know, knocking door to door and expecting, you know, people to let them in and search into the entire neighborhood. It's like they have to kind of like, it's like fishing, like they had said. I think they can tail him and see if there's anything going on from that perspective, but there'd be no reason other than just, oh, this is a car that's leaving at night, to do anything legally.
If they can't enter Brad's house, why couldn't they just stay in Brad's house?
Hmm. It's a good question.
Brad's wife.
Yeah.
That's wife. Right.
I'm going to turn them in. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say, I think that David and Emily survived this. And I think that they stay on the run for a while. I think that they were the first team that we saw. I think that they're sort of going to be our hero team on this. And I think we're going to follow them for a while.
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to be the stars of the show. I can't help but think about Winner's Edit.
Winner's Edit.
Going to make it all the way.
Hunter's Edit.
David and Emily really seem like they're going to do well.
And I'm hoping that it also, as we go into like further episodes, that we do get some of these. I think we have a lot of questions like what is the safe way or the correct way to engage in somebody's house? Like there's got to be probably some rule of the game where they're able to search. But let's imagine that you're Brad and David never contacted you and you have these people coming up and wanting to search your house. You're going to be like, no. So it's one of those things where if it's like, well, if they're at my house, I have to then let them search. Well, then if you let them search, you know that they're there if you're the hunter. So I'm really not sure what the rules are. I'm hoping some of those things get explained.
Yeah. Are you from the CIA, the FBI, NSA? No, ma'am. We're here from CBS.
Yeah. Not familiar with that agency.
We have a warrant signed by Les Moonves to come in and search the house, if you don't mind.
the law powers of CBS.
Yes. Yes. Scott Bakula will be here soon.
Which is why I am wondering if there is, like when we talked earlier, one of those like rules where you do have to like rotate every 3 days or 4 days, or you can't stay in a residence without going outside and getting some fresh air and some vitamin D from the sunlight. Yeah. We'll see.
What they should have done here, this should be like the ultimate like crossover show where like Joe Mantegna is going to come in and like investigate like something, and then we'll have like the Mark Harmon is going to come in. They could cross all of the LL Cool J is going to come in. It'll be all of the CBS procedurals in one show.
So Team Foxtrot and Team Golf, yeah. One person is actually
back.
Yeah.
One,
yeah.
one member of each team is a hardened veteran of the law, and the other is a hardened veteran of CBS procedurals.
Yeah.
Can you only pick from the procedurals, or can we also pick from the comedies? Because I think that Matt LeBlanc is clearly looking for a new job, so maybe they could like tuck him in there.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Maybe at Command Center they could say like, "We just need a man with a plan right now." Like, "Oh, how you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, okay." All right, let's talk about our team that is probably not going to have the winner's edit. The second team that we meet in this episode, Michelle and Angela, and they are best friends. Liana, could you tell us a little bit more details about Michelle and Angela and their relationship?
So here's what I've learned about the two of them. Angela loves candy and Michelle never answers her phone. Those are the only two things I think I've learned. I know that they're friends. I don't know. We're going to get to see their yearbooks because they're putting in requests.
Well,
for their yearbooks.
My favorite thing.
Exciting.
Where going back to Connie Min, they do some quick research on Angela and Michelle and they realize, oh, they went to high school together. Get a copy of that yearbook. That's going to give us some hot leads on where they might be going today. Get their high school yearbook from 20 years ago, Kurt.
I can defend this. You want to watch me? This will be good. Okay, brace yourself.
It says here Michelle, have a great summer. I'll never forget the times we had in math class. Oh, she does math.
She was in the AV club. No.
Okay.
She was voted most likely to hide out in a campground. Okay, where we got something.
If they're both high school friends and they're still in touch and living in the same area, it's a high likelihood that the high school they went to is probably not far from where they currently live. Meaning they may keep in contact with many of their old high school friends. Like many of the friends that I went to high school with that live in that area, their circle of friends is really that group of people. So they could be. And then if you see that these two, Michelle and Angela, were actually parts of like the, let's say, cheer squad or, something, then that would give you potentially another circle to look within. So I do think that the fact that they're high school friends, that they're probably still in the vicinity of their high school, and that might give you at least a place of where to start. You'd think that Facebook would be perhaps better for that, but we'll see.
I don't know. Liana, you buying that?
I can see it. The theory has merit. I really think the superlatives are key, though. You know, the I really love the idea of most likely to hide out in a campground or most likely to hang out with a, you know, in a trucking company. But I just don't see how 20-year-old information is really going to crack this case versus, you know, they've been Facebook friends for 9 years.
It's the warmest cold case ever.
Well, we could bring cold case into this, too, that if we do the all-stars of all the CBS procedurals. So Angela also drives a Honda Accord. We learned that information. And Ri-Fi's got some hot information about how they both have kids. And we know that they're going to want to be checking in with their kids. But this could be a wild goose chase, Kurt, because neither Angela nor Michelle mentioned anything about trying to make contact with their families.
I think it's early. They're still excited. They spent one night at a campground. I think that especially when Michelle says that she's never been away from her kids before. So this is actually probably a very good thing to keep track of. It's actually a running theme throughout the first episode of the BBC series, where one friend gets completely ticked off at the other friend because she basically calls not once but twice to check in on how her kids are doing at her mama's place. Mm-hmm. So I could actually see this potentially being something.
Liana, were you concerned that Michelle was going to no-show when Angela was frantically trying to locate her?
She's already won. They can't find her.
At the meeting place? Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was
great. Yeah.
The meeting up. Yeah, I don't know. Her sunglasses were pretty cute. So I forgave her that she didn't show up.
Yes. Lo and behold, here comes Michelle. She shows up. She got dropped off by... Kurt, could you explain the relationships with the trucking company?
So from my understanding...
Who is Andy Dominic?
Okay, so... I was a little worried that Angela was just going to keep driving her Honda... but apparently Michelle shows up with a big rig and they're like, oh, she stole this. But no, I believe it's her husband that owns a trucking company. Michelle got one of the, big rig drivers, Melanie. It's actually Michelle's sister, to drive them to the campground. But we do see that command center is like, you know what? Let's follow up on those trucks.
Okay. So they get dropped off at the campground and they spend the night in tents, goes off without a hitch, but then they don't really have much of a plan after that.
Which was more intense, David's night or Michelle and Angela's night?
We didn't see anything from it. I don't know.
But they were intense.
Oh, I got it.
Okay. Sorry. We went a long way for that one. I apologize.
Yes, it was worth it. They end up deciding to just like walk down a road together with the camera crew, which is not really ideal for when you're on the lam, I wouldn't think. And so what do they spot around the bend, Liana? There appears to be a car, and so they debate whether they should continue walking or not.
Right. So it's just a parked car, right? The door was open?
Yeah, it was.
So, well, it wasn't a black Escalade, so obviously it wasn't, you know, it wasn't one of the teams. But they're already out in the middle of the road with a camera crew following behind. Like, if the car is really the team, you know, they're going to notice them. But then what is so funny is then when the truck shows up with, Tony. Yeah. Classic Tony, yeah. So when Tony shows up, they just start jumping up and down and screaming.
Hey,
like they're so
Michelle,
excited.
Angela, I'm here. Quick, get in the spy shack. Let's get out of here. No, he would be perfect. He would be ideal to have on there. But no, I just love the shot of them like, oh, let's not. We can't risk it. Let's just walk 100 miles this way instead.
Right. Like that was their plan, too, is they were just going to walk in the other direction. Yeah.
Like on the road. They're hiding from law enforcement. Like, why not at least walk like along the tree line?
Yeah.
And it's one of those access roads that like parallels the highway. So like there's not many trees where they're standing. So not only can anybody on that road see them, anybody who goes by on that highway can see them.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they just didn't wait at the campground because they borrowed a stranger's phone at the campground to call for Tony. Yeah. And it's like, well, just meet us on the road.
Kind of surprised that guy had a phone. that they talk to. Yeah, so Tony picks them up, and that's the last we saw of them. We didn't probably didn't see them the last like 20 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, I wouldn't have pegged them to be the one. Yeah, if I had to pick one of the three teams to have it said one of them is not going to make it out of the first episode, I think I would have pegged Michelle and Angela, but yeah. It was our millennials.
Okay, so we'll have to pick up with them on Wednesday night again with the 2-hour second night of Hunted coming up this Wednesday at 8 on CBS. Okay, so I got a lot of questions from the listeners of the podcast. Before we get into that, let me just take a moment and talk about refinancedance.com. Because if you're hunting for a better rate on your mortgage, that's the place to go check out. If you owe less than $625,000 on your home, which is almost, you'd have to win Hunted almost three times for that kind of money, you could check out refinancedance.com. Because did you know that qualified homeowners can take advantage of Congress's once-in-a-lifetime mortgage relief program called HARP? It's a totally free program and doesn't add any cost to your refi. The bad news is that, like most government benefits and probably the time of many of these contestants on Hunted, this will eventually expire. And homeowners who act before the program expires this year could take advantage of the greatest mortgage reduction program in U.S. history. HARP is a program with no downside. All it does is help qualified homeowners get better, more affordable mortgages. Responsible homeowners have used HARP to eliminate up to 15 years of mortgage payments, cut their interest rates in half, or simply lower their monthly payments and save up to $4,100 a year. That would be 41 trips to an ATM for any of the Hunted contestants. If you want to learn more about HARP and the shocking amount you could save by refinancing, you need to connect with the lenders at refinancedance.com. It's a name that makes you smile and savings that'll make you dance at refinancedance.com. That's refinancedance.com. All right, back to something that also makes you smile and makes you want to dance, the premiere of Hunted. And so many, many questions from the listeners of the podcast. And so Matt Rubio wanted to know, will Max Dawson be caught in this episode?
I don't know. It depends if he gets naked or not, because that might attract attention.
Could be. Stephanie Miller Bellario wants to know, is there seriously a guy that goes by Rifi? I wish I would have said, instead of Refi, I wish I would have said Rifi.
Well, he is, I think he's in the operations team. And the first time we saw him, he was billed as Ryan Phillips. So I'm assuming that Ryan Phillips is Rifi, but I have no idea. I have no idea why they switched it up. It's no Rhino, but it's a Rifi.
we should all do that with our names, right? Be Libor.
Libor. That's good. Kirk. That's a pretty good one.
Kirkla.
I like Kukla.
No, that's
troublesome. That's troublesome. No, that's not. Amy Howard wants to know, why aren't they using burner phones? I get this from a couple of people. So people watch The Wire want to know, why aren't they using burner phones?
I have no clue. Again, but the logic that a lot of these people are taking is not what I would have done at all. I would not have called my friends, but I don't know. We'll see.
Can you still get burner phones? They still make those?
Here's the thing. I think anybody that recommended that, probably everything that they know about burner phones was learned from fictional movies and TV series. So I question, because I was thinking, yeah, why didn't they? But I think, like, what do I know about burner phones? Everything that I do was scripted. So I would put little faith in even doing that. But at the same time, like, if they're just on the run, they've probably seen movies where people have used burner phones, just like, you know, we have. And I don't know why they wouldn't try to do that. But at the same time, I just don't know, like, you know, there'd be trouble activating it. Maybe it can still be traced, or maybe they were told that they couldn't. But I hesitate to, you know, give the rubber stamp to that being a good strategic direction.
Ari Ferrari on Twitter wants to know, what is the ideal costume / wig to wear while on the run? Liana, you got anything?
I'm telling you, the wigs that Matt and Christina had were pretty darn good. No, I think you have to. Well, I actually am amazed that David hasn't cut his beard or shaved his beard off, because kind of a big tip off.
Yeah.
Right?
When you've got a beard like that, it's part of your identity and you're never going to shave it.
Never.
Even for $250,000.
I don't think so.
Mike Bloom wanted to know, would it be technically cheating for the bearded men to shave to evade capture? It never comes up as an idea for David.
Well, I think we've seen in some of the promos where somebody was coloring their hair, I think. So, you know, clearly you can change your identity, or like, you know, you can do something to change your identity. So that would probably be a good idea. I haven't had a haircut in like 2 years.
So. we see someone shaving their head, I think, in one of the previews too. So it's, I think that, yeah, it's definitely fair game. I just, David strikes me as that when you have a beard that's that well maintained, it's part of your identity and you're not going to shave it.
Okay. Even for 250K. Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Kurt, what would be the ideal wig?
I'm thinking of maybe like a bald cap.
Bald cap. That's interesting. Maybe. So, yeah, you have to get like the glue. I mean, do we have bald caps that look good? I feel like that would look, I mean,
no.
Yeah, that's the problem there with that.
I'm thinking the trick is to get somebody else to take the money out of the ATM for you. So that you're like on camera as little as possible. Like, we got a ping. Let's check it out. Who is this elderly woman?
Actually, that's a really good point. I think that they should just go all out with the costumes. Have you guys seen those like Tyrannosaurus Rex inflatable costumes? I really think they just got to go with one of those. Like, when we're talking about Halloween, you got to do a crazy Halloween mask.
You don't want to call attraction to yourself. Like, so that's kind of an issue where you might be disguised, but if you are sort of like people are spotting you in a crowd, that's not good. Do you think that we could see somebody go full Tootsie, Kurt?
We saw like a half Tootsie from Christina. Yeah. That would be funny.
Like a Some Like It Hot.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. You'd have to, be more of those where you got like a pair of people doing it. Because it seems like so little. We see previews where they're using kind of like, you know, facial recognition technology. So maybe it's like, well, that's a person that's a female. Let's not even scan them because we're looking for a David.
Leona, could somebody go full Doubtfire this season?
We can see a Mrs. Ooh. Featherbottom in here somewhere. I don't know. Oh, Red. Man, we'll see.
What are you talking about? I'm not your old friend from college. I'm the nanny.
Oh, no. Maybe then they'll win an Academy Award or whatever the equivalent is for TV.
Ryan Hilliard wants to know, does Matt suffer from Alec Christie hanging open mouth syndrome?
Yes.
Yes, definitely. it's like there's two. I remember Alex for two things. Open mouth, collecting meat. And I'm sure that's probably like on the short list of what Matt can bring to the table.
Yeah. I do feel like this was a real missed opportunity to get the Christie brothers back out there as people who are on the run from the law.
Yes. Yes.
Perfect. Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. What is this? A crossover episode? Like, they really should take advantage.
And then you have like Tony and Brett LaBelle chasing them down.
Oh, that would be a beautiful dream team.
Meg wants to know, the great Megan Z wants to know, what secrets would you hide in your spaghetti? Leona, anything? What would be good to hide in the spaghetti?
That's actually where I keep my phone. How did you know?
Oh, is it a burner?
So it's it's because everything from the wire is real. I would hide little, like, what were the little notes? The like crumpled up notes? You know, like stuff that like in the pasta.
To-do list.
The to-do list is like laundry.
I burned the calendar, like David said, but I just threw my to-do list away.
Oh, man. Okay. This is from Kirsten Said What, who wants to say, why didn't Emily just take her whole paper planner? And I believe also Kirsten said on Twitter that she still does use a paper planner, a paper calendar.
If there's anything like more conspicuous than the love child of Abraham Lincoln and Carrot Top, it's that the woman next to him is carrying this like 3 foot by 3.5 foot paper planner.
Oh my gosh. I was expecting her to make, you know, from like kid science fairs, one of those big poster boards, our plan written at the top.
She's got her dream board for the next 28 exactly. days up in her room.
If you dream it, it'll be real.
Randy K asked me, Rob, where would you and Nikolov's shoes hide if you were on Hunted? I assumed it would be one of the many ball pits. That would be pretty ballsy for anybody just to hide in their house. It's just sort of like, okay, I will evade law enforcement by hiding in some sort of a thing that I have constructed in my own home. So I would say that probably I've said this before that I think I would just find like one of those Saddam Hussein spider holes and then just get in that. Mm-hmm. But I think that that would probably be, my wife gets antsy. She's not going to want to spider hole it up for 28 days. She's going to say, we never go anywhere. Why do we have to stay at Brad's house? This is boring. We should why don't we go other places? Why can't I go on Facebook? It would be, my wife would not do well on Hunted.
It's like the father of the Bluth family in Arrested Development hiding in the attic the entire time under his family's nose.
No, she can't do that. My wife, when it rains here, that she's like, oh, to stay in the house the whole day.
Would she get you guys in trouble for calling the kids or calling family?
Oh, she would be posting on Instagram, tagging the location of where we are. Yeah,
the geotagging, hashtag Hunted.
Yes. And how else would she be able to be getting mad at what other people are saying on Facebook every day? Natalie Franklin says, we both speak to our parents at least once a day. My freaking goodness.
Yeah, that was my response too. So I don't know, maybe it's my cold heart, but I would have no problem not talking to my family for a month. Yeah, that's nice. I wish I could do that.
Especially if you gave them a heads up that it might be coming.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
No, Matt and Christine, they have to talk to them every day. Well, you know what? The other thing was like that Matt and Christine, like their parents seemed to know that they were coming, yet whoever's mom wasn't picking up the phone. It was like, oh, what do we do? Mom's not answering the phone.
They didn't even survive the day, did they? Like, they got in the car, they drove. I think it was a same day capture. And yeah, it's like we're going to potentially be gone for 28 days and it's one. And then, like, you know, well, are you, I don't know how much they can tell them. Like, well, are you going on Survivor? No, we're just going to Augusta. Yeah, that was the same day, wasn't it? There was no nighttime scene.
Yeah, we never got to see a night one for Matt and Christine.
It was all day one.
It was all day one that they got in the car, they put on a wig, they went to the bus station, and it was over.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful story arc.
I don't know how anybody is going to get that far on this show.
Yeah, I have no idea. Do you think that anybody is going to make it?
I don't think so.
I would bet at least one team. I mean, I'm thinking like there's it's a lot different here, obviously. Like, you had a lot of hitchhiking taking place in the UK version, but that's a lot different than the Southeast US mm-hmm. in terms of the safety that you're looking at there. I think it's just like, yeah, think outside the box. And then just Matt, they even said like at HQ, you know, Matt and Christina kind of came from a wealthy background. They weren't really able to, even like think outside the box that much. So like when the plan started to fall apart, they went to their old patterns. I think you need to like, get into, you know, I think you need some gamers in there, actually. Some people who could like, are used to this and can, you know, think a little bit more creatively and throw some curveballs.
Well, you only have David who fits that description. And unfortunately, yeah. Emily's bringing him down.
We also have, what, six other teams that we haven't seen at all.
Yeah.
I'm actually all in on the Lost Wolves, I think, is their team name. The ones that left out that note for
Oh, yeah, that's coming up on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So who are those teams? What's their description?
Let's see. No, I did a preseason draft on these teams. That's how invested I am. So these guys were
with who? Who did you do a Hunted draft with?
I did it with some splinter group. Okay.
All right. Fair enough.
She's cheating. She's cheating on RHAP, Rob.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is Lee and Hilmar are these two guys. And actually Lee does, he makes the escape rooms.
Oh,
that's his occupation. So that might aid in their evading the hunters.
It did not work out so well for the wet bandits to leave clues behind for law enforcement, but we'll see how it works out for the wolves.
Yes, the Lost Wolves.
The Lost Wolves. Now, the funniest thing ever is when you go to the CBS.com page and you can check out what the cast of the show, but it's not the contestants. They start with all of the people that were at the Hunted headquarters. So you get to see the entire staff there, which includes the commander, Robert Clark.
Yes.
No cyber relation. Intelligence, Mike Cole. That's M-Y-K-E.
I remember that.
cyber analyst Charles DeBarber. That's the guy with the Rubik's Cube and the derby hat. There's Lenny Paul, the head of operations. There's Steve Masterson, the intelligence analyst. Connie Min, the intelligence analyst. Ben Owen, the intelligence specialist. Teresa Payton, the head of intelligence. Aki Peritz, the intelligence analyst. That might be Aki. Rifi, operations supervisor. There's Zaira Perzada, the intelligence analyst. Landon Stewart, the cyber analyst. And Andy Stumpf, the operations supervisor. And don't forget Dr. Max.
Don't forget him. Is there going to be a quiz?
I need an org chart. Alphabetical. Yeah,
there's 14 people looking for these idiots.
It's a little overpowered.
And then there's also all of the SWAT teams that they are on there. Hunter Team Bravo, Hunter Team Foxtrot, Hunter Team India, Hunter Team Charlie, Hunter Team Echo, Hunter Team Alpha, Hunter Team Hotel, Hunter Team Golf, and Hunter Team Delta. We don't need all these people.
But it's 100,000 square miles. They've probably got their own, like, oh, they're coming into the Hunter Team Alpha area, so you want to deploy them. I was disappointed. We didn't get the Hunter Team name for the ones that visited the bus station for Matt and Christina. We just got their names. I was disappointed. We didn't know that if that was like Team Alpha or Team Hotel.
That was Hunter Team Echo. I believe that was Echo? Allison and Jonathan Gomez.
Okay, yeah, that sounds. The names are right there. So
yes. So there you go. Echo. I mean, this is really the equivalent of, you know, a machine gun for a mosquito. The amount of people that we have searching for these people that have no idea what they're doing.
How did they get this many people? And these guys see, and like one woman, Teresa, right? She was the former White House, like,
chief information
officer of intelligence. Yeah, information officer. Yeah. So, like, did they just call up, you know, I don't know. How did they find these people? Like, put out a casting call for, you know, like retired Navy SWAT, SEAL or SWAT team guys?
NCIS does not have this many characters. Like, they just do it all with LL Cool J and Robin from Batman and Robin. And they just—that's it. That's all they need. They got like the lady with the glasses, right? And
Walking Dead hasn't had this many
pigtails.
People,
right?
Yeah, this is worse than like Survivor Australia, right? Yeah,
Australian Survivor. No, this is like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Oh no! Do you think we're gonna lose some of these people along the way?
I don't know. Well, we lost Matt and Christina. That's what we know. That's it. Okay. Do you like it, Kurt, when they draw a red X on them after they caught them?
That was like very like Murder in Small Town X or like one of those other horror reality shows for me. So I kind of dug that. That's a necessary part of it.
This is also really fun on the bios for Matt and Christina. So Matt Sundberg, he is age 27. So they have them say, you know, their character traits, three words that describe you. His catchphrase is awesome. That's his catchphrase. And then Christina is 24. She's adventurous, friendly, and determined. Her character traits is that she relies on parents for help. Not afraid to use her looks to get what she needs. And her catchphrase is, we got this. Newsflash, we don't got this.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Just like Matt, he always says. Okay. All right, that is Matt and Christina. So, are you interested in knowing David and Emily's catchphrase?
Yes, please.
Okay. David's catchphrase is one step ahead or a thousand steps behind. This time, it seems like that it is the latter.
Yeah.
And then Emily, her catchphrase is cool deal.
That's a catchphrase. Yes. What Matt's is like a bumper sticker. Or a t-shirt. It's not really like a good punchy catchphrase.
It's the log line to his book.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's after the colon.
I was either going to be one step ahead or a thousand steps behind.
From defender to story. From defendant to defender.
Yes. And then, of course, Angela and Michelle, last but not least, Angela. Are these their yearbook quotes?
Most likely to say.
Yes. That Angela, her catchphrase is, I can't even explain.
Okay, well, that's how I feel about Hunted. So.
Why are we walking down this road right now? I can't even explain.
And Michelle, her catchphrase is, right, right.
Okay. There you go.
Man, they would be really bad superheroes.
Yeah. Not exactly you got it, dude, in the catchphrase department.
I wonder if those were submitted by the contestants or if this is what intelligence scraped together from monitoring their social media.
Right.
Ri-Fi, come up with a catchphrase.
Yeah. You're the doctor. She says,
right, right. Yeah. On her MySpace page. That was her quote. Okay. All right. All right. Let's start to disengage from the Hunted. We got a lot of resting up to do before we get to 2 hours of Hunted coming up. Leon, are you having fun?
I'm having so much fun.
Yes.
This is great. This is really great. I'm really going to enjoy the run. It only goes up until March 8th, right? So how many episodes are we going to have? What, like 8, I think, maybe?
I don't know how many two-hour blocks we're going to get. That's going to be the quest. We got an episode tonight. We got 2 hours coming up on Wednesday. And then, I'm not sure, I would imagine an hour a week in the Survivor time slot until we get to March 8th. So probably, I think it's probably about 5 weeks, 6 weeks.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, that would make sense. Well, so there's actually, if anybody is interested in how they might fare on Hunted, you can actually tweet hashtag I'm being hunted to get your personal vulnerability index. Mine was 89% and I would be easy to catch.
Oh.
I have no idea what this is based on, but if you're interested, you can check that out.
Okay, check that out. Kurt, it seems like I would expect the ratings to be pretty good for Hunted on the heels of football. You think that's probably going to be the case?
Yeah, there'll probably be some carryover audience. So yeah, we'll see how it actually carries over into a week into Wednesday night.
Yeah, both the football games today ended up getting kind of lopsided towards the end. So maybe some people were tuning out. The show came on around 10 o'clock. On the East Coast, so it's getting a little late for some people, but I expect pretty good numbers on Monday morning for overnight, and then let's see, the true test is going to be how many people stuck with it on Wednesday night, but that will be something that we will find out later on this week when we're back again to talk more Hunted later on this week. If you want to make sure you don't miss any of that, you can subscribe to the podcast, robisawebsite.com/iTunes. All right. What's the hashtag for today, Liana? You got anything? Anything jump
out? I liked
out?
Karen's pasta.
Karen's pasta. Perfect. Perfect. All right. Kurt, I know you've been wrapping up all over the place.
Yeah. So we're doing a weekly coverage of Celebrity Big Brother UK. It's on 7 nights a week. So we kind of do a week one, week two, week three wrap up, etc. It's only on for 5 weeks. It actually ends on Friday, February 3rd. So we just should be releasing the week 3 coverage shortly and getting into a couple more episodes down the road. And then we also have our weekly Top Chef Judges Table with Mike Bloom and Antonio Mazzaro. And who's that other one? Oh, yeah. Josh Wiggler. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that every week, having a lot of fun with that, having a good time with Alex Kidwell on the BBUK stuff. And so that's what's going on my end.
Of course, you can follow the great Kurt Clark at Kurt Clark. And then Liana and I may or may not have spoken about a season 34 game changer this past week.
It's a secret.
Maybe.
I don't know if you can catch us.
Yes. Maybe Ri-Fi has the information on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll I'm sure he could dig it up. If anyone can do it, Ri-Fi can do it.
Yeah. So a lot of fun stuff coming up on the podcast, including that. And so in the meantime, you can follow Liana on Twitter at Liana Boras.
Boris.
I'm sorry.
Uh-oh. I don't want to get into this whole thing again.
Okay. All right. Any final thoughts on Hunted before we sign off?
I just have a full set of notes here for like when this does eventually get canceled. Liana, I can guide you through the steps of grief.
Yeah. Okay, good. I need a seasoned pro to walk me through everything.
Okay.
All right. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about Hunted on the website, robinswebsite.com. We will be back with more Hunted talk coming up later this week. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.